From Relay FM, this is Connected, episode number 88. Today's show is brought to you by PDF Pen Pro from Smile, the all-purpose PDF editing tool. My name is Mike Hurley, and I am joined by Mr. Federico Fittici.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Federico. How the devil are you, sir?
Doing great, Mike. As I told you when you called me, I'm still kind of relaxing, catching up. I'm gonna go grocery shopping later, you know, which is, it sounds like a quick kind of task, but it takes me a couple of hours. You know, that's how I do my shopping. So I'm doing great, Mike.
So I think Steven's not here this week. I think he's hunting IMAX.
Yeah, he's taken on a cross-country trip to find the remaining IMAX.
Because I think he only needs one more. And he one, has them only, all.
Only one.
I think it's only one. So he is, I believe, he's somewhere in California hunting for the final iMac.
How do you hunt for an iMac?
Exactly. That's why he's not here. It took a little bit longer than he expected. Yeah, he's just got graphite left.
Graphite. Which isn't, you know, it's not the most exquisite of colors, no. If you think about it. It's
because I believe he was able to find a pretty good Bondi.
Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Bondi.
Good job.
So he got one of those. So now he's off looking for a graphite. So I hope that he will be back next week, and I hope that he finds everything that he's looking for.
Nice. Good luck, Steven.
Good luck, Steven.
Thinking of you.
We are. Good luck. because it's just me and you.
Okay.
Should we talk about something that we're doing?
Yes.
So, Federico, everybody should know by now, we spoke about this last week, Federico is going to be traveling to San Francisco, and we are going together for WWDC. Mm-hmm. And I realized last week, you know, we knew that you were going to be in London for one day. You're coming to London, and then me and you were going to stay in a hotel near the airport and go from there together out to San Francisco. And me and you were going to have dinner with some friends. And I realized, why have dinner with friends when we can see lots of friends? So we're going to have a meetup in London at a bar called the Big Chill House. Now, we have a limit on the amount of people that we can fit in the room. So we instituted a ticket policy for this, and we had 70 tickets for the room. They are all sold out. Now, the reason I am telling you all about this, dear listener, is I spoke to the venue today, and there is the possibility for us to get a larger room at this place. So if you are interested in coming to a Connected meetup, it will be me and Federico, and we'll be hanging out at a great bar. We did this meetup for Upgrade in this area previously, and you want to come, it's on the 10th of June. It starts from 8 until 11. You will need to have a ticket to come because we have a maximum amount of people we can fit in the room. You can go to ti.to/relayfm. And you can find out more about the event. Sign up for the waiting list. There are nearly enough people on the waiting list now, Federico, which will allow me to confidently book this larger room.
Oh, that's so insane.
So if you are interested, if everybody that we have on the waiting list gets a ticket, we're very nearly sold out as well for that larger room. So once that's the case, that's as big as the room can be. I think it's about 150 people.
It's just totally insane.
Yeah. There's an amazing poster, which I'll just put in the show notes anyway, because Frank, as always, did an incredible job. So we really hope that people can make it. We're doing everything we can to increase the size for this one because we can. With this instance, we can actually increase it. But it will mean that everybody will need to buy a few drinks, because otherwise I will be left with a very large bill at the end of the night. So I hope that you can go check it out, and we hope to see you in London in June.
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect, Mike, it's kind of crazy that this many people are coming to meet us. I mean, we're just two guys.
It's not me. It's all for you. But I'm happy with that.
I don't think so. You're kind of an attraction lately, Mike.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, you are. There's people constantly talking about you and your iPads.
That's true, actually. I was on Mac Power Users.
Yeah, see? You're the man of the hour, Mike.
Katie was so mad. She was so upset about the iPads. It's so good. It's such a good episode.
I gotta listen to that.
Yeah, it's well worth listening to. I think at one point she just goes into complete despair about me, which is wow, amazing. Okay. It's amazing. I love David and Katie, and being on Mac Power Users is an honor. Because it is, as we have mentioned many times, an absolute institution, and we're very lucky to have it as a part of Relay FM. And I was happy to go on the show to preach about my iPad, multi-iPad life, which I increased today. Federico bought another pencil today. So I have both iPads now fully decked out at all times.
I'm no longer surprised, Mike.
Hey, you know, I'm all in. I am all in. I'm taking what you started, and I'm taking it to its furthest point possible.
You're multiplying that, really.
Uh-huh. And I'm actually planning this week for the incomparable project that I'm working on to actually record something and edit it on iOS. So I'm going to do that over the next week or so. I'm really trying to go in all in here, my friend.
You should do a time-lapse video of you trying to do that on the iPad.
Yeah, that would be. And you can see me pulling my hair out. I wanted to mention one last thing about the meetup, just for everybody that is coming and may come. If we do increase the capacity, the room will change. It won't. We had it as a place called the Deco Room. It will be in a different room, but I'll send information out about that if we do it, because we're going to be getting a bigger room, hopefully. So please sign up, and we'll hopefully see you there. All right. So I wanted to mention, do you remember last week when we were talking about Arc, our sponsor?
Yes.
I mentioned how maybe a wizard could create a confetti cannon to go off when Arc finishes.
Yeah.
Well, there is a wizard.
It.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Lucas tweeted at us with a script. And what it will do is, he actually did something very smart here. It doesn't launch physical confetti. It launches digital confetti on your computer screen whenever Arc completes a backup. Bravo, Lucas. Bravo.
Look at that screenshot.
It's fantastic,
amazing.
Right?
People are
so
crazy. It's fantastic.
He put it on GitHub. You can go and check it out. And so it's very, very clever. And I say bravo to the wizard that is Lucas for creating backup confetti cannon.
Good job.
Last week, we teased that you were working on a project that I expect everybody knows about right now, which was your iOS 10 wishes and concept video, along with the dark theme for Mac Stories, which I am reminded about as I see the lovely dark Mac Stories in front of me.
Oh, nice. You keep it activated.
Yep, keep it dark, my friend. And I am very flabbergasted by the views on view count in this YouTube video.
It's approaching 400,000.
400,000, Federico. 400,000.
It's a lot.
There are 78 people that gave it a thumbs down, though. What is your comments on that? what do you think about those 78 people?
I think some of those people, maybe half of those, are just trying to see what it feels like to use the thumbs up down button.
Yeah.
Maybe half is just an experiment. Maybe
I'm going to press
half
the button.
Just,
no, I dislike this. Oh, no, okay. I've liked it again. So I reversed my decision. I went to just
Thank
see
you.
How it felt. I didn't like how it felt. Here's something interesting about the dislike button on YouTube. When you click the little like button, the button goes blue. From gray, and when you click the dislike button, it goes black from gray.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, they're like, they'll do this, you know. It's a little Pavlovian response for you. I was very honored to get a special thanks,
of course,
all in there.
You were you and my girlfriend and John were the few people that had to endure my stress and my questions and my doubts
I've
before
seen
launching
many cuts of that video. Be like, look at this one, we had a line change. Okay, so off I go watch the one line move. But it was it is an amazing video, and I was very honored to be able to see it in advance. But I wanted to ask you a few questions, because look, we'll go into these wishes, we will actually revisit the wishes on the show probably in late May, right?
Yes.
So we'll do it as part of our what do we want to see at WWDC. So there's no point going over the wishes right now. But I wanted to ask you about the video itself, because obviously that is a different method, a different medium for you and Mac Stories. How did you find the YouTube system?
Well, I think I kind of cheated because I asked CGP Grey for advice before uploading the video. So he gave me like a checklist of things to do and to make sure that I was doing. It was fine, I think. I opened the channel the week before, so we didn't have a YouTube channel. And before uploading this video, I just moved two of my old videos, like 30-second videos, about drafts and iOS automation, just to make sure the channel wasn't empty, you know, when it was launch day. I uploaded a logo and I put in a bunch of links for the Mac Stories bio, you know, linking to Mac Stories on Twitter and the club. And then I prepared the description, which was okay. No major issues there. And I uploaded the video. I think I have to be thankful for my fiber connection, because the video was in 4K. It was a almost 3-minute video, and it was about 500 megabytes, maybe less.
That's not too bad.
No, it's not too bad. It took me like a minute.
So, funnily enough, you know that the videos, I don't know if you know, but I put Cortex on YouTube.
Yeah, I do. I know.
And it's just the audio file and the logo, like a version of the logo, which is in 1080p. The videos tend to be around 2 to 3 gigabytes.
Wow.
It's nothing, right? Just because that's just how the video comes out, because it's still a video file, which is 2 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So that's one of the unfortunate parts about doing this, is there's nothing. But it ends up being like 2 hours long.
Yeah. And I didn't really come across any issue. I mean, the video uploaded fine. I set it to private because I just wanted to make sure that people couldn't guess the link. CGP told me it never happened to him that people would guess a link for an unlisted video, which was another option. But I just prefer, you know, for my paranoia.
There is something weird that, like, when I go to your video page on YouTube, it doesn't show the iOS 10 video. I have to go in.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Something's weird has happened there. Like, you have to go to videos before it shows up.
I know.
But whatever, it doesn't matter, because people are just finding it, it's being linked to. I think you were in the YouTube trending.
Yes. And that really made up for about 20% of the views, the being discovered in the YouTube trending page. I saw a lot of people, like I could see the effect in the real-time stats. I could see the effect of the new people discovering the video from the trending section. It hit the trending page about when it was about 100,000 views. So yeah. I guess the YouTube system finds kind of momentum in videos and decides to feature them. And it was also embedded on a bunch of other tech blogs, which helped in getting the kind of exposure. It was on 9to5Mac, it was on The Loop.
That was part of the reason for doing the video, right? Surely, for that, yeah?
Yeah, because, you know, it's so easy to embed a video and to... And that was the whole idea. I got a bunch of bloggers asking me, do you mind if we embed the video? And I was like, no, that was the main goal. Please do use the embed code.
Right. I don't know if this is why you did this, but here's when I look at this objectively, right? If somebody block quotes an article, you get nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing happens. No. It's just there. But if they embed a YouTube video, you still get the view. The view shows in your view count. Now, you're not getting any money from this because you didn't put any advertising on it, which I think was the right thing to do, by the way, because of
the purpose
of the video. Oh, yeah, you have not in the system for long enough. But I think the purpose of the video was to promote Mac Stories as well, right? Like, that's the other side of this video was to promote Mac Stories to new people, right?
And the club, yeah.
Yeah. And Club Mac Stories as well. So that's kind of like, you know, the other side of this. So that's how it brings more people in and on the other side. So not having advertising on it would have been the right move anyway. But it isn't. I think it was a very clever publishing and business move to do it this way, like to create this video, which can be anywhere. And it doesn't matter where it is, because people would, in most cases, take the video and embed it. Pretty smart.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the comments that I got from a lot of people is that it's not an absurd concept, that it makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
Hundreds of people told me it makes sense, it's not crazy, and it's the kind of features that I could see happening, which is not usual. So I've been covering, you know, Mac stories, I've been writing for 7 years. And every time there's a crazy concept video, it gets a lot of exposure. But a lot of people also say, this is crazy, Apple will never do this, these features are totally useless. And that was one of my concerns, that people would see the video as a sort of a crazy project, you know, with the crazy features that Apple would never do. And as soon as I published the video, like, the reactions started coming in that it's sensible, it makes sense, it's not crazy. And that makes me very happy, because both Sam and I, we spend a lot of time thinking, what are the features that we both think make sense? And what's the best way to do it in an Apple-like fashion? That it's not, you know, too crazy with new animations or new interface designs or a different theme for the entire iOS interface. So it really makes me happy that people see some kind of a reason, you know, in there. Some kind of, it's not too crazy, it makes sense, I could see this happening, good job. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I mean, because, well, I think part of it is, most of the concept videos, you only ever find out about them because they're crazy, wild things. But yeah, you already had the ability to create a sensible one and for people to see it, which is why I think it became popular, right? Because you have the platform in which to get this video out to the first amount of people that need to see it for it then to become viral. Mm-hmm. Whereas people like Sam, who created a concept video, right? He needed it to be a little bit more out there to get people like you to find it in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Like, if
it
he created sense. Your video, you'd just be kind of like, yeah, sure. Like, this is sensible stuff. You know? I think it depends where it's coming from.
Yeah, I think the angle that we chose was, so look, every year I do an iOS wish list. And I do it because I want to, you know, put it out there, the kind of features that I would like to see. And this was not the kind of, the way that you come at it is not, look, I'm a designer, I can make super cool stuff, this is what Apple should do on iOS. It was, I have these wishes, and here's how I visualize them in my mind. And it's a very, it's not a big difference when you think about it, because the final outcome is the same, it's a concept video. But the way that you approach it and the way that you present it, I think it resonated with people. And they could see the idea of, here's a person, he works on iOS, he writes on the iPad every day, he knows iOS, he would like to see these features, and he found a way to visualize them.
Yeah.
And I think the angle helped kind of get people interested and to see to help them see my line of thinking. So I'm very satisfied with how everything went in the end.
Talking about very satisfied, you got a WWDC ticket.
I did, yeah. Yeah, I was very lucky, Mike. Last Friday, I was at the club, not Club McStories, an actual club with people dancing and drinking. And I got an email from the Apple Store, here's your receipt. And I like, my heart started pumping like crazy. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And Sylvia was like, what's going on? And I look at the receipt, and there's, you know, the WWDC ticket confirmation. And I was like, totally going nuts. And so I bought drinks and we celebrated the ticket.
I'm not surprised. So what is your plan?
My plan is to, well, first watch the keynote, because, you know, I've never been there, and it...
well, I you have. Maybe not at WWDC. Oh, well, yeah, but you've done one, you know.
I've done a keynote. I just want to do a WWDC keynote, you know. Yeah, I've done, course, a product keynote. And I feel like it's a nice sort of celebration to do my first WWDC keynote for iOS 10, you know, like a new beginning, whatever. That's how I see it in my mind. And the other thing that I want to do is I want to attend key sessions, mm-hmm, for iOS. Mm-hmm. Because I need that kind of information and kind of networking with developers to prepare my iOS 10 review. So last year I spent way too much time watching the videos over and over and talking to people who were there at the sessions over email to get a better understanding of what was going on, and to just talking to developers to ask them questions. And I feel like I can save a lot of time if I go to the key sessions that are, you know, that are, I mean, I have to decide which kind of sections I want to cover in my review, which we'll talk about in the evening, me and you and Steven. Mike, you will have to help me. But once I do know what kind of sections I want to have in my review, I will mark the sessions that I want to go to and just attend those, and then talk to people and go to the bash and the kind of essential stuff. I'm not interested in OS X, not interested in watchOS. I'm going there for iOS and the key stuff that I understand that I want to cover. And I feel like I need to wake up early, go to the key sessions, and then in the afternoon and maybe in the mornings where iOS doesn't have a key session, just have fun, because I want to mix it up. You know, it's my first time. I want to do part work, part fun. And I feel like having fun there, it's important, because it also helps me relax and meet new people, which, yep, again, it's sort of a circle of life. I need to have fun, meet new people, talk about work, fun, you know, it's all connected. No pun intended. So, that's the plan. Understand what I want. First, watch the keynote, understand what's going on, understand the kind of sections that I want to have in my review, talk about it with you guys, find a plan for the key sessions that I want to go to, and just attend those sessions, and then have fun and meet people.
It's a pretty great plan, man. It's a pretty great plan.
Yeah, I think I can do it, you know?
Yeah, the days are quiet. The daytimes are quiet because so many people are in the they're in the sessions, and now of all the other conferences and stuff that go on anyway. You just need to understand that you are going to be very, very busy.
I know.
Prepare for that.
I'm preparing both physically. I'm exercising a lot. it's true.
I believe you.
There's a bunch of tasks in my to-do with daily exercises.
I saw them in a Twitter screenshot. I saw abs and something.
Yeah, I need to be in good shape. So I'm ramping up the exercise routine. I'm doing the diet that I was doing last year again. Mm-hmm. So you know, I need to be very, very energized, because now it's gonna take a lot out of me to do all of the stuff that I want to do.
Good man.
But it's possible, you know. It's possible. There's worse things in the world. This is fun. This is great. I shouldn't be concerned. Just gotta have fun.
All right, this week's episode is brought to you by Smile and PDF Pen Pro. You've heard me say in the past about the fact that PDF Pen is the Swiss Army knife for PDFs. Well, when you look at PDF Pen Pro, you're looking at such a huge Swiss Army knife of all so many tools embedded within it, you wouldn't even be able to fit it in your pocket, because PDF Pen Pro has everything that you need to master PDFs, like adding signatures, editing text and images within a PDF. You can even perform OCR on scanned documents and export them into Microsoft Word format. But with PDF Pen Pro, you get additional features as well, like the ability to create an interactive PDF form. You can build a table of contents, set document permissions, and convert websites to multiple page PDFs. PDF Pen Pro really is for the person that needs complete control over their PDF documents. You can easily export to Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint, and PDF archive formats as well. And if you need to, which this is a real cool feature, I like this one, you can add tooltips to your PDFs for voiceover accessibility. The list of features goes on and on. This is a powerful piece of software. This is a pro piece of software. If you are someone that uses PDFs a bunch, you should be checking out PDF Pen Pro. And what's great about the fact that you can get this online at smilesoftware.com/connected is you can try the free demo of PDF Pen Pro today. So you can go to smilesoftware.com/connected, try it out, and you'll be able to see if PDF Pen Pro is the tool you need. I use it constantly. They just came out with a new version. Go and check it out. PDF Pen Pro requires Yosemite or later and works great on El Capitan. Thank you so much to Smile for their continued support of this show and Relay FM. All right, Federico, this is going to be a tough one, my friend.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, okay.
Apple earnings.
Mm.
So what quarter was this? This was Q2,
right? 2016, yeah.
Q2 2016. This is I believe, now we can talk about this, and we're going to talk about this in quite a bit of detail, but I believe that Q2 2016 is going to go down as a moment in Apple's history in the future.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's first down quarter since 2003, yeah. I think. So yeah, definitely.
For 13 years, quarter on quarter, Apple have increased their profit and revenue and all that stuff, right? It's gone, everything has gone up quarter on quarter for 13 years. So we're looking at, if you're thinking about every time that Apple come on to do one of these earning results, they've had over 50 of these. They've come on and the story's been the same. 50 in a row, right? Better than last time, better than last time, better than last time. This time, not so much. Mm-hmm. And I find this very interesting. And I want to just preface this conversation by saying Apple is not doomed. And I understand that they made a ton of money.
Yeah.
But a downward trend is never a good thing.
True.
And that's what we're looking at now, especially when you look at some of the areas that are down. So profit is down. The iPhone is down. Mac is down. And of course, our friend, the iPad, is down again year on year. So let's look at the iPhone a little bit. So the iPhone sales were strongly increased in the previous quarter because of pent-up demand in China, is my understanding, right? Like in Q1, they had lots and lots of sales for the 6S because they had some pent-up demand there. And Apple, you know, a lot of the stuff that you'll find in these earnings calls, I'm going to put a bunch of articles in the show notes, one from you, one from Jason. You guys both do a really great job of breaking this stuff down. A lot of it is very complicated. But basically, it seems like Apple is saying that they're in a situation where the upgrade cycle is looking pretty good on the iPhone, but the previous quarter was a bit of an anomaly, which makes everything else kind of look a bit worse. Is that, am I right in saying that's kind of what they were saying, right? It's like,
that's my understanding too.
It's like this is better than it looks, but it looks really bad because the last time was so good.
Yeah.
And that they also said something about the SE, that the demand of the SE has been higher than they expected. And I actually have real life experience of this as of yesterday. So yesterday morning, Adina woke up and her phone was dead. Like, it's I have never seen an iPhone as dead as this iPhone.
So it's the very old iPhone she was still using.
She was using a 5S, my old 5S.
Oh, okay, 5S.
You turn it on and the screen would just go blue and then it would change all different colors and die.
Oh, nice. That's a dead iPhone.
Mike. It's dead. So she went to the Apple store to try and get an SE and couldn't get one. It was 3 weeks back ordered.
Wow.
So today, really? I went and picked up a 6S for her. She decided to go 6S because she really wasn't very keen on the SE because it looked the same.
Mm-hmm.
She really was like very vehemently against it because she's had the 5S for like 2 years or whatever. And she's like, I really don't want to pay £500 for a phone that looks exactly the same. She was very against this.
Yeah,
so
makes
she's
sense.
Gone for the 6S. And I get it. I understand that feeling. Mm-hmm. I totally understand it. But the iPhone being down is it just looks weird, right? On the charts, it just looks weird.
It looks strange because we're not used to it. But this is a question that I asked you before we recorded the show. Is this, do you think, is this Apple's fault? Or is this just a consequence of the technology world changing? Meaning, is Apple to blame? Or is it like an outside force, a trend going on for any company that Apple can do anything about?
I feel like it just has to be a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there are trends that are changing, but Apple could always do something, you know? I mean, it's really difficult because it does seem like trends are bringing this stuff down, but none of these bad things have affected them before.
Something struck me, a comment from Tim Cook. He said, he said the 6S is stronger than the upgrade cycle of the 5S, but the acceleration of last year's iPhone 6 launch, it's much, much bigger than what we're seeing this year. Meaning, as an upgrade, the 6S is doing better than from the 5 to the 5S, but it's no match for the insane sales of the iPhone 6 last year. So why do you think that is? Is it just because the iPhone 6 was a better phone compared to what used to be there before? Is the 6S kind of a letdown in terms of an upgrade?
No, I don't think it's that. I just think it's because they were selling into new markets for the 6.
For the first time.
And I think it was just the thinking that it had nothing to do with the iPhone 6. It was just the iPhone. You know, if they would have released, if the iPhone 6S was out, then the iPhone 6S would have sold that many. It was just because they were into a new market that they weren't in before. Because look, this is the problem, right? This was all the conversation in the previous quarterly results when Apple said that this was going to happen. This isn't a surprise that this happened, by the way. You know, if anybody wasn't following, in their previous earnings report, Apple forecasted that they would be down. They fell within the estimate that they gave. Which is also weird for them, right? To fall within the estimate. Usually they exceed the estimates, but they fell within the estimate. And I think it's purely because Apple have bumped into the amount of people in the world that can buy their products. It doesn't usually happen, but this is the situation that they're in. They are in we are currently at the point where we have sold our products to everyone that can buy them. Mm. And they mentioned India as a growing market, and great, there's you know, more people than China. Is that right? I'm just going to say that, probably be wrong, and everybody in both countries would be mad at me, but lots and lots of people in India that they can sell to. And if the middle class emerges in India the way it did in China, great. Maybe in a couple of years' time, there'll be more phones to sell. But then all it will do is then it will just push this problem off another few years.
Maybe that's why the stuff like the upgrade program is so important for Apple right now. And why so many people see a lot of potential there. Because having reached the kind of ceiling, you know, all the people that you can reach that want to buy your phone, now what you gotta do is you gotta switch gears and have those people upgrade year after year to the to the latest model.
So what you end up with in that scenario is lower income, like overall, but more sustained.
Yeah, but sequential stability, I guess.
Because what it will do is it will bring it down for a period of time, but you won't see the peaks and valleys, which is probably better from a Wall Street perspective.
Probably. It's really like a subscription. You get
those... just checked, by the way, there's 100 million people difference between China and India. And India is 1.2 billion and China is 1.3 million. A billion, sorry.
In terms of numbers, it's not a huge... I mean, it's a huge difference. I mean, Italy is not even 60 million people.
Yeah, but when you're over a billion, 100 million, it's give or take.
Yes, you know? Give or take 100 million people. Tim Cook even said, we see India as China 7 or 10 years ago.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. Like, this is their next potential market, but they're many years away from that. And all they'll be in is this problem again. They'll have a peak where they sell into that market. Then it will go down again. Like, it won't go down to where it is now. It will probably still be higher because it will be a new market selling to more people. But all they would be doing is just having this problem again. Like, where Apple is right now, it is not a problem for the company. This is not a scary thing. But what it is a downtrend. And downtrends are not good. You just don't want to see them, right?
Yeah.
Because they're forecasting the next quarter is going to be down on the previous year's quarter again. So this is going to happen again. So the reason that I'm kind of so interested in this from just looking at it is in the whole time that me and you have been covering Apple, even interested in them, this has not happened.
It's the first time.
This is the first time. And next time is going to be the second time. So it is just a very peculiar thing. Okay, let's take a look at this, right? So if the iPhone is down, what, in theory, the way that the company could, and I would assume that other people in Wall Street would say, should go against this. If you've met the amount of people in the world that can buy your iPhone, you should be selling more of your other products, right? Like, that is the way that, very simply on paper, you would meet this problem. Like, if everybody has an iPhone, you then need to sell everybody an iPad, right? Like, that is, in theory, the way that you would beat this issue, right? So you sell them more products. So this is where the other part of this is. Mac is down, which is really weird. Like, that doesn't happen very often. I think the previous quarter the Mac was down year on year, but like, that's just like a strange thing to occur. Like, why would the Mac be down? That doesn't even make any sense. And then iPad is down again. So every time I mention this, and I think it's very clear now that I am loving the iPad. I think in previous years, people have thought that I was so harsh on this point because I didn't like the iPad. But, you know, I am now iPad forever. And whenever I bring this stuff up, people point out the fact that, like, they sold 10 million of them, 10 million of everything is amazing. Mm-hmm. To me, it's not the amount that's sold. I don't care how many it is. It could be a billion or 10 million. It's the fact that it continues to decline. And and the fact that the iPad sales are just going down, 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 it's not good because it hasn't reached the bottom.
See, I don't know. I think it's kind of... I think the iPad, from a financial perspective, is kind of weird. Because I don't know how to kind of treat it. You know, is it like an iPhone? Is it like a Mac? Because it's really none of both.
Because from a financial perspective, you cannot compare it to either. Because the Mac, whilst it's had a shaky Q2 here, has over the last few years grown, right? Not by a lot, and it's still half the size. But the trend is good, right? That not only are the people who currently buy a Mac using it, there are new people buying the Mac. That's not what's happening with the iPad, right? Like, if you look at the iPad and the Mac, they're probably the closest in comparison from a renewal cycle, right? Like, you have one and you use it for a few years and then you buy another one when either one breaks or there is something so irresistible that you must buy it. That you'd expect that they're going to be closer like that, but something's happened with the iPad in that over time, interest continues to wane.
Probably. I mean, yeah.
Because what's happening is, like, look, we're like 6 years into this product's life cycle now, and you can look year on year at all of the quarters, and you can see that it's steadily declining. If it would have been after year one, we're at the point that we're at now, and it was right down low, you can say, oh, people buy them, and they don't buy any more of them. But what's happening is the way that I look at this is, not only are people taking a long time to upgrade this device, there are less people making that upgrade as time goes on, because the numbers are completely unstable. They are just declining, right? If there was some kind of stability in the numbers, which there isn't yet, you would see people having a relatively frequent refresh rate like you see with the Mac. But that doesn't happen with the iPad, and that's why it concerns me and interests me, because the product continues to decline. Mm-hmm. Am I making sense here?
No, it makes sense, and I think it's going to be a long road ahead. If Apple really believes that the iPad is the future of their computing, you know, taking the iPhone aside for a moment, if they really believe that the iPad is the future, it's going to be a long road to kind of change the perception of the iPad. Yep. Because what I don't understand is, are people buying iPads as their only computer, like I could do, for example, or are people buying iPads in addition to a Mac, in addition to a PC? Or is it just, you know, there's people buying the iPad as their only computer, which is lasting for, I don't know, 3 to 4 years. And what gives me... So I agree with you. I agree it's concerning. It's very clear at this point that, you know, maybe some people, a lot of people are not interested in the iPad. But what gives me some hope is two things. If people are buying iPads as their only computer, they're buying more iPads than Macs, you know? So if I want to buy a computer, I can choose, do I want to buy a Mac or do I want to buy an iPad? And if that's the reason, which I don't know, there's more people choosing the iPad. Even
if it's still twice the size.
It's still almost twice the size. I don't know where it'll stabilize, but it seems to be about twice. But in any case... Last year, Apple sort of started understanding that they've been doing things wrong with the iPad, both in the hardware and in the software, and they started to change. So with iOS 9, with Pro, with the Pencil, with another Pro, with accessories, it tells me that they understood they kind of stood in a state of, neglection maybe for a couple of years. And now they're doing new things, but it's going to take time. You know, it's not that Apple releases iOS 9, Apple releases the first iPad Pro, boom, iPad sales are off the roof again, you know? And I think it's gonna take a long time for kind of change the perception. Yep. Because what you haven't done in 2 years, in 3 years, it's gonna take you twice as much to fix your mistakes. That's the way that I see it. So if Apple really thinks this is the future, we're gonna make things right, it's gonna take a long time. It's gonna be a long road. Because there's still people using an iPad 2. And we're, you know, I can only imagine if people who bought an iPad Pro last year are going to be using an iPad Pro in 4 years. So understanding the refresh cycle, bringing more features to iOS and kind of bringing the pencil and the better hardware and the kind of experience of the Pro to the more affordable iPads, it's going to take a long time.
Tim Cook made two statements about the iPad, which I want to try and see if we can look at these from a common sense perspective to try and understand what he's saying. He said that the June quarter, so the next quarter, we expect to see our best iPad revenue compare in over 2 years. And then also said, we expect seasonal sequential decline in iPad sales. So if I'm reading this correctly, like reading between the lines, what he's saying is, the next quarter, Q3, there are going to be more iPads sold than the previous quarter, but there's going to be a seasonal decline. So I'm very confused about how this is going to work out, but are they saying it's going to fit somewhere between those two figures? It's weird because if you're saying there's going to be seasonal decline, it would indicate that there is going to be a decline from Q2 to Q3. Right?
Yeah.
But Q3 2015, there were more iPads sold than Q2 2016. So if they're saying it's going to decline from Q2 to Q3, but yet there's going to be a better comparison from year on year, that doesn't add up, right?
I don't know. Also, the way that he phrased it.
Jason tries to break this down at Six Colors, which is where I'm getting these quotes from. And What Jason's tried to work out from this, because he's also struggling with it as much as we are, he says, so I suspect Cook is really saying that iPad revenue will be down by single digits for the first time in 2 years, as opposed to double digits. So the actual numbers sold might still be down, but the revenue might be better, because they're probably selling the iPad at a higher ASP than they were before. Could be. Which, that if that's all it is, that's not good. The real key, I believe, this is one of the main difference about us and looking at this to the way that analysts and Wall Street people look at this. We look at numbers of products sold, not the revenue generated from the products. That's what we care about, right? And me and Jason have spoken about this before, an upgrade. Like, the idea being that however many product numbers are sold says something about the direction of Apple and its ecosystem. Like, if Apple made more money from the iPad than they do from the iPhone, and they were still selling 50 million iPhones and 10 million iPads, but just in some random way they made more money from 10 million iPads, that wouldn't change the way that we look at Apple, because there's still 50 million iPhones, so the ecosystem's very different, right? Are you following what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the revenue generated by product for us is not the point here. It is the amount of that product sold, because it says something about Apple's direction as a company, I think. So, look, whatever Tim Cook is saying, I don't think what he is saying is there's going to be 20 million sold next quarter.
No, me neither. I think the reason I'm struggling is looking at these numbers from a people perspective, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand there's really complex stuff going on and analysts do a much better job at understanding ASP and seasonal trends, that kind of stuff. But from my simple point of view, I wonder, what can Apple do to make things better? to make a better product and to make more people understand the iPad. Because in the end, that's what drives sales, making better products.
Yeah, this product, definitely. Like the iPhone, they can't do anything. I think there's not really a lot they can do with the iPhone to push against.
Maybe a new design wouldn't hurt, you know?
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, I think if just looking on year-on-year trends and stuff, like the idea is like they've just sold too many of them. And
yeah.
So they can't keep selling it because they're just running out of people. Like for example, if you look at Q1 2015, that was a new design and the larger phones, they sold 74 million of them. Q1, they sold 74 million again because they had the pent-up demand. I don't think Q1 2017 you're going to see 74 million iPhones sold again. I just don't think that's going to happen because both of those times, the reason that they jumped those 20 million over the Q1 2014, in my opinion, is because there were factors of people that hadn't bought an iPhone before for a certain reason. And I would be very surprised if they can do something in 2017, which is the same, right? They gave larger phones to people that wanted larger phones. And then they were able to sell iPhones to people that couldn't buy iPhones before. I don't think they're going to have that in 2017. I just don't see what that could be. But that's why it's not my job.
Is it too crazy to think that eventually the iPhone won't be on a one-year cycle?
No, I don't think that'd be the case. I would be very surprised because there are if typically phones are on two-year cycles, then you want it on a one-year cycle so you get people on both years. Am I making sense? Like, mm-hmm. Say you sign up for a contract at 6S, then okay. You won't be ready until the 7S.
Mm.
So it makes sense to kind of sell them every year because you get people every year.
I don't know. I just wonder if this kind of constraint of having to come up with a new phone every year, it's sort of becoming a problem now that the market is so saturated with so many people having an iPhone, and it's so difficult to, at this point, it's so difficult to come up with something new every year. I mean, what you're going to do? You cannot do a design, yeah. A new design every year.
No, but people will buy them every year though, so why not keep selling them every year? Like me and you, we're going to buy a new iPhone every single year, and there are so many people that do that, so why not do it?
I don't know, I guess it's just strange to me that this year, the rumors we've heard about the iPhone 7 are so kind of strange because people are talking an iPhone design refresh next year. So for the 7S, but if it's a design changer, you're going to call it the 7S or the iPhone 8. And people are talking about the iPhone 7 being mostly similar to the 6S, which I think I don't know how it would resonate with people. You know,
I think this is what people said about the 5, though.
That
it was going to be similar to the 4.
Mm. But it was and still different.
It was bigger, but the overall design was very similar. Like, I just think that sort of stuff is like, it's secondhand. Like, I just don't take that until I see it, to be honest. Like, mm-hmm. The idea of, oh, it's going to look the same. Because there are some people that just think all these phones look the same anyway, so. Right, so I just want to go back to looking at all of these numbers. Looking at them all in one, right, looking at iPhone, Mac, iPad being down, I just think there's no real spin you can put on this. Like, it just doesn't look good. Like, I don't know what you say, right? Like, again, we'll go back to, like, they sold tons of all of these products. They made millions and millions and millions, billions of dollars, right? Which is fantastic, as I say, but you look at those trends going down. You know, the fact that, like, you and Jason have had to adapt your charts because you didn't have down trend charts.
No.
Right? Like, it just doesn't, it just feels weird, right? Like, I just don't see that anybody inside of Apple is really going, yeah, but we made so much. Like, they don't like that this is happening, surely. They don't want to see this.
You never want to see a downtrend in any kind of work, I think. But I mean, of course, it's, you know, the sky is not falling. It's not a big problem for Apple right now. It's more of a perception problem, maybe, to have people think that Apple is in trouble, even if they're not really in trouble.
Yeah.
But to have the kind of message, you know, it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, maybe. That's my fear, that people are going to start thinking Apple is in trouble. maybe I shouldn't buy a phone, and people are going to buy different phones, people are going to buy different tablets. I know it's a sort of a apocalyptic scenario, maybe, but that's the biggest problem that I see, is the perception of trouble, not necessarily the trouble, which is there.
Because of the headlines, right?
Yeah.
Because the headlines are not reporting things incorrectly, they're just sensationalizing parts of it. Right, because this is different. Usually when people, every earnings report will pick out something to try and be like, Apple is doomed, and it's always just rubbish. But this time, there is stuff that you can pin on. Not to say that they're doomed, but to say that, you know, you can, if you want to, it's not as difficult to write an Apple is in trouble story this time. When they're clearly not, but you can write it because you have a chart that proves it.
You have the numbers.
Yeah. You have the numbers. And again, right, Apple is predicting between 41 and 43 billion for the next quarter, which will be a decrease from the 50 billion sales in Q3 2015. Mm-hmm. They're not doomed, but this is a change.
It's change, and I guess Wall Street doesn't like change for Apple in this sense.
Why would they, though, you know? I mean, look, I know that Apple is judged on a different scale to other companies, and the reason is because they have been like a rocket ship for the last 13 years. So, like, the reason Wall Street looks at them in the way that they do is because Apple does things that you could never imagine from a financial perspective. So when that stops happening, they have to be judged differently.
Yeah, maybe even rocket ships eventually have to stop to refuel.
Yeah, let's be honest here, right? Let's look at this. Apple's meteoric rise has helped everyone that cares about it, right? So yeah. Everybody at Apple has made lots of money because the stock went up so crazily, and people like me and you have built businesses on the back of the fact that Apple has been such an incredibly successful company.
Yes.
So now that it's changing, we kind of just have to accept that, like, and just accept the fact that now Wall Street is unhappy, like, because it's been so incredibly good for such a long time. And I know, yeah. I think that as I'm saying all this stuff, I sound like I'm trying to spell doom and gloom, which I'm really not attempting to do. I'm just trying to get my head around the fact that the company that I follow so closely and have been for such a long time is now in a different world to what I've seen it at before.
The side effect of that is that if this trend continues, Apple has a chance to be seen again as the underdog. And people love underdogs. People love companies who are in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be in trouble, but
the perception of trouble is just as strong, maybe.
Part of Apple's problem in this is its history. Everybody knows they were the company that nearly went bankrupt. You know? So that's why the Apple is doomed stories exist, because it existed once before. Like, Nintendo just posted a loss. Nobody's saying Nintendo is doomed. People are saying Nintendo's in trouble, but no one's saying that they're going to go out of business. And Nintendo's in way worse shape than Apple, because Apple is one of the most profitable companies in the entire world. But it's easy to poke at Apple and point at Apple and say that they're going to go out of business, because it happened once before. But there are things that are up. Services and other products are up. The Apple Watch, it falls in other products. Tim Cook said that it met expectations for the quarter, and also said, this is very interesting that he said this, that they believe that the Apple Watch will be a seasonal product like the iPod was, with a lot of holiday sales.
Yeah, it makes sense.
How is that going to factor in for the way they market and push the product? Who knows? But what we do know is, if you were fed up of paying for things in September, well, sorry. Here's another thing to pay for every September.
Yeah, you're going to be paying a lot of money in September.
So I think one of the things that we're going to see is that the iPhone and the Apple Watch will always be unveiled together. And yeah. I think what that's going to do is as Apple is struggling to find new things for the iPhone to do, they will be able to say new things that those products together do as marketing.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Especially when the Apple Watch will gain independence from the iPhone, they will be able to focus, I guess, instead of technologies to make the watch work as an accessory. When the watch is independent from the phone, they can just work together. Mm-hmm. You know, they can do stuff together. They can be faster, communicate faster, do things together with sensors and stuff. So I think we're going to see. I mean, the Apple Watch makes sense as a holiday gift. You know, I've heard from a lot of people buying Apple Watch sport models for their families, you know, their significant others. So it makes sense to me to have it be a seasonal kind of product. What's interesting to me is the App Store revenue being up 35%. And the way that he said, Apple Music, which is our first subscription service, crossed 13 million paying customers. So why do you think he said first?
Because they will do more of them. One of the ways that you make more money is sell into the previous, sell into your existing customer base, right? They have millions, tens of millions of iPhone customers. Sell them subscriptions. There's going to be other stuff, whether it's going to be TV or apps. They'll do other subscription services. Because, look, Apple Music, 13 million, that's pretty good. Like, because lots of people don't like it. And it's in a market that Apple were really late to. And quite frankly, in a lot of ways, they have a worse product. But they're able to sell 13 million subscriptions because it's on the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, Apple, if they continue to go down this road, might bump up against the European Union. And this is something that they're going to need to consider because the European Union gets very upset about things like this. Mm-hmm. But I think that as time goes on, Apple will continue. I mean, there's so much TV stuff that they're talking about, right? Like, I think that these shows are not going to appear in Apple Music. It will be an Apple TV thing, but you'll be able to also watch it on iOS devices. Like, I believe that the subscription service that they bring out for the Apple TV will not just be on the Apple TV. It will be an Apple TV, like, they'll call it something else. I don't know, like Apple. I was going to call it Apple Watch. No, you can't do that. That name's taken. But, you know, like, it will be like a video service. It'll probably be Apple Video, right? Because they have Apple Music, Apple Video. And you'll be able to watch their own unique programming and blah, 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 stuff from Disney, you know?
So yeah.
The way they've done it before. They'll have some movie stuff. I think that's where they're going to go with this, and it'll be another streaming service for them. Because, look, frankly, they need to push up the revenue, and one way they can do that is to sell things to their existing customer base. Their existing customers are not buying iPads, so you may as well sell them things that don't cost as much to produce. Digital things, content.
Yeah, or maybe they could sell like a like a fitness program subscription, people to get in better shape.
Do it all,
like,
right?
Like Weight Watchers, look, but done by Apple.
Apple are looking at Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. Amazon do all of these things. I think that's what they're looking at. They're like, Amazon has found a way to tie a subscription service to everything. Now, admittedly, Amazon's is one subscription service, which I don't think Apple will do. I think that there would be a few different subscription services for different things, but I think that's the route that they will probably end up taking.
I think so, because you want to make money on existing customers, mm-hmm. you know? You want to make more money out of people who are already your customers, and what's yep. the best way to you know?
If they're not buying iPhones every year from you like you want them to, have them give you a little bit of money every month, which is also the iPhone upgrade program. That's what that's all about too. You know, we were talking about that earlier.
What I wanted to ask you, Mike, to kind of close this sort of segment, is looking at the future. So we've talked about the iPad. We don't know what Apple can do. There's a bunch of things Apple can do. I guess we'll talk about it later when we do our iOS 10 episode. Do you think, so in addition to video subscription services, more stuff on the App Store, do you think Apple is going to place their bets on VR eventually? Could it be a nice, maybe money generator, of course, but a nice complement to the iPhone as a product, to have the iPhone become the VR machine?
I don't know. I'm struggling with understanding mobile VR and how it's going to work, because the Gear VR works because it's an extra thing you put the phone into. Like, I can't imagine how a device could have VR without you needing to put it into something or connect it to something, you know? I think that Apple are going to be late to VR unless they surprise us in the next year. I don't see what they're going to do there. But they should do something. I also don't think that, as it stands right now, VR is enough of a thing to make a big dent. I think an Apple VR product would make about as much of a dent as an Apple Watch product.
You think so?
Yeah.
Hmm. I really think if they eventually do VR, it'll be an iPhone thing. It'll be some kind of iPhone accessory or based on the iPhone. Just because we've talked about this on our video game show remaster, but I do believe that eventually all VR is going to be mobile. It's going to be the same screen that you carry around all the time, just because it's the right size of a screen to put in front of your eyes, and VR is going to be based on that. But that's years down the road, you know, especially with Apple. They like to wait for you know, new technologies to take off. But I do see VR potentially, you know, 2-3 years from now as a new kind of addition to the iPhone. I don't even know if 3 years from now it'll be called the iPhone, but I guess so. So that could be an idea. But in general, I feel like I look at these numbers, right? And it's objective. A downtrend is happening. It's going to happen again, and it's not good news. And there's no way to spin this positively. Even you could say, well, we're doing bad now because we've done so much better before and it was an anomaly. But again, negative numbers are negative numbers. There's nothing to argue about those. But I do wonder, as I told you, is this Apple to blame? Yes, partly. I think Apple is to blame here, especially with the iPad and especially with the Apple Watch. I don't know what kind of impact it's having on you know, what meeting expectations means. But from my perception, it doesn't seem to be the kind of crazy success that the first iPhone was. But I do wonder, what can Apple do to make things better? And the things that I believe Apple can do will take time, will take a long time to kind of steer the ship, especially with the iPad. So I think we're in for a long period of changes, Mike. And it's going to be, I'll tell you what, it's going to be fun to observe. It's not fun because, you know, there's people going crazy with these negative numbers and it puts a lot of pressure on the financial departments of Apple.
I find it interesting.
It's interesting. It's fascinating to observe. And I think the next couple of years really are going to be interesting, you know, with the iPhone upgrade program expanding to more countries, with this iPhone 7 and iPhone 8 refresh, with the new versions of Apple Watch, with the iPad sort of finding a new soul again. It's really fascinating to observe, if only from a blogger and podcaster perspective.
If you want to catch our show notes for this week, head on over to relay.fm/connected/88. Thanks to the lovely people over at Smile with PDF Pen Pro for supporting this week's show. If you want to find Federico online, head on over to macstories.net. And also check out our podcast Remaster that we do, which is all about video games, at relay.fm/remaster. And also Federico hosts a show on Relay FM about iOS productivity with Fraser Spears, and you can find that at relay.fm/canvas. You can find me online. I am at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E. Federico is at Vitici, V-I-T-I-C-C-I. I host a bunch of other shows at Relay FM. You can find them at relay.fm, because there's lots of them. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Stephen is at ISMH. He'll hopefully be back next week with another iMac in hand, fresh from the plains of San Francisco, I guess, is where you'd find them. We'll be back next time. Until then, say goodbye, Federico.
Arrivederci.